Well, we're back here on Mornings at McFarland's. Thanks for joining us this morning. It's just a real treat for me to talk with another author on the show. Jeffrey Ryan is with me this morning talking about Appalachian Odyssey, which was his first book you wrote. This came out in, 2016?
Yes.
Was it right? It's basically the title is Appalachian Odyssey, a 28-year hike on America's Trail. And I got to tell you, folks, if you open this up and just look at the contents, it really is. We were talking a little bit when we were off the air. It's a bunch of short stories, is really each chapter. And they have chapters like Shenandoah, which I always say, oh, Shenandoah, I hear you calling. What a, just a gorgeous song. But then there's a truly historical hike, Joyful Spring, Worlds Between, 360 Degree Euphoria. And my personal favorite is The Boot Fiasco. So how did that come about? How was it that you ended up writing this in little short stories that came together as nicely as they do?
Well, I really was kind of struggling with the structure of the book for a while, and I kept trying to think of it in sort of novel form, and it just wasn't coalescing for me. So I had that eureka moment where I went back to Chaucer's Canterbury Tales,
I said,
you know what? It really is 28 short stories that each segment took on its own flavor. As soon as we walked out the door, there were themes. Within a couple of days, there were themes that started evolving about each one.
So had you kept a journal all the way through that
could
refer to?
Yeah, okay. I had. And that's funny because I got done with the book and I sent the book to the publisher. And two nights later, I had this, oh, my gosh, moment. I sat up, bolt upright in bed at 3 a.m. and with this fear that there was something wrong with the book. And I went to my drawer where I had all my journals and I found the one. What ended up happening was, in fact, there was a chapter missing. It had photos, but there was no verbiage. So I found the journal. I opened it. And I thought, well, at least I have the journal. I can fix this. And it literally said, I decided to take a break from writing on this trip. there was nothing else.
Foiled again.
Yeah. So 22 years after the fact, I, in a panic, emailed Wayne, who hardly ever took lengthy notes. And he called me back and said, you won't believe it, but I found my journal from that trip and it's the only one that I took extensive notes. And I'll translate it from Wayne speak into something Jeff that speak. You will remember.
Sure.
And as soon as he mailed it to me, the whole trip came rushing back and I wrote the chapter and got it to the publisher and none the wiser. So this whole thing has just been
in my
like
circles,
that.
We call those God things.
Right.
Those are just God things.
Right.
That you're like, how could this ever have been put together if there wasn't an intelligent design to it somehow,
exactly.
Right?
So once again, the duo, rides in and saves the day.
Robin was there
right.
when he needed
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
Oh, perfect. And now, so you are going on a tour, or you're actually in a tour already, publicizing or publishing, I guess, of the next book.
Correct.
Which is, I think, just from the little bit I've read of the preface on it through Amazon, because they're saying you can pre-order it now. But it's fascinating because it's actually the history behind the trail.
Right.
So, and you've got that perspective of having done the whole thing, but then the history of how it came about is a fascinating story in
and
of itself.
It's very fascinating. And there were two individuals involved. Benton Mackay was one of the first land use planners. He was a forester by trade. And in 1921, he wrote an article called An Appalachian Trail, a guide or a report on land use planning. And the idea took off. I think everyone thought, wow, a 14-state trail. It was actually 12 when he started. But he wanted to go from Mount Mitchell to Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
Okay.
So the idea kind of coalesced and got a lot of excitement initially and then just faded, went into a lull for a while. And along came this 28-year-old hotshot from Maine named Myron Avery. And he basically, in 9 years, built the trail. He decided where it was going to be, got all the easements, personally walked the entire trail, wrote the guidebook, and founded three trail clubs, including the Appalachian Trail Conference. It was just a phenomenal achievement.
So when you just, nobody said, well, maybe people said you can't do that, and you just said, why can't you?
Right.
So when you're 28 years old, you can think that way.
Well, yeah, and almost to a fault. He made a lot of enemies. Tell people he's like Steve Jobs on steroids. He really thought.
Just didn't care.
If you're not on the boat with me, then I have no use for you. Boy. And just kept on plowing forward.
It's fascinating to me how history is replete with personalities like that.
Right.
And some would call them bullies, some would call them obnoxious, you know, but they get things done.
Right.
You know, and things that the rest of us get dividends from for years and years to come. Well, and the Appalachian Trail is unique in that it was actually a bunch of trails that existed in many cases that just needed to be linked together.
Some of them, correct. Particularly in New England and New York, the Taconic Parkway had several trails that existed that early on became part of it. And Massachusetts, of course, the Appalachian Mountain Club was the second oldest hiking club in the United States.
Wow.
The oldest one, believe it or not, started in Portland, Maine, which is crazy. They called it the White Mountain Club. And the reason why it was first is because there wasn't a train to the White Mountains from Boston yet, but there was one from Portland, Maine that went west. And so these guys would go over there and climb in the late 1800s.
Well, and that was kind of fascinating too, because the part of the trail that you started on is one of the older sections, isn't it?
Yes.
It was actually a gentleman again that had a lot of foresight, purchased what
200,000 acres, Governor Baxter.
Amazing.
And they didn't want it.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Keep it to yourself.
Then they took it and said, "I think we did something really good here."
When he made a comment, something to the effect of that what he had done or what they were doing would preserve, long after everybody else was gone, it would preserve Maine for the people that were part of it.
Right. The character of the state would be intact, and he's very much right. That mountain rises out of nowhere, and it's iconic. You know?
Well, there's a picture, too. I have to, you know, as you go through this, you wonder, where was that taken? Oh, my God, that's beautiful. Where was that taken? There's one that's in the very beginning, I think it is, where it's a little cliff that's, oh, here it is, where the preface is. And that just a beautiful vista. It looks like you could just walk out onto the edge of that cliff and just look out over.
That's on Katahdin. That's Thoreau's view of the lakes.
Okay. Just incredible stuff, which, like you say, you have to work to get to experience those. But anyone will tell you that's the way anything of great enjoyment is in a life, is it's the stuff you really had to work for.
Right.
So now you have some Wisconsin ties, too, so lest people think we are just talking about something that is far and foreign from us. You went to Ripon College.
I did.
That before.
I did.
So you have strong Wisconsin roots.
Very strong.
So
it was funny. I graduated from Falmouth High School in Maine, and I just decided all my friends were going to UMaine, and I didn't want it to be a continuation. And so that was one big leap that I took, was I'm going to go to this college in Wisconsin. I had never even set foot on the campus. And I went there, and I absolutely loved it. I spent all 4 years there.
Well, they have cookies. I mean, I know that would be a big attraction for a college kid or a high schooler. So what was it about Ripon that drew you? Just that it was
First, my mom grew up born and raised in St. Paul, so I had spent some time in the Midwest as a child. And I thought, you know, I really always enjoyed being out here and the people and, you know, the people, number one. So I just said, I'm going to go out there. And, of course, it was just a great experience. I wasn't let down in any way, shape, or form.
So then you got done with school there and then ended up at L.L. Bean? Was that right out of school?
Well, when I was 12 years old, my mother asked me what I wanted to do when I was older. And I said, I want to write the L.L. Bean catalog. And she thought I was nuts. She said, what, not a fireman or a policeman or something? What's wrong with this kid? How did you even come up with the idea that someone does that for a living? And I said, well, we get these things in the mail, and I thought someone must do this.
Sure.
And
sure.
So I went to L.L. Bean and said, I'm preordained. I'm here to write your catalog.
Boy.
And they said, that's very nice, but please go work in the warehouse.
Boy.
So I got an entry-level job there and spent 7 years convincing them that I needed to do that.
Your book tour is actually through L.L. Bean still, isn't that?
Correct.
So some of the stores that you're going to and actually doing book signing events and that sort of thing?
Yep. I hopped in a 1985 Volkswagen van last July, and I went to 36 L.L. Bean stores and drove 65,000 miles and
my Lord.
Met amazing people.
Well, in Canada, too, right?
Yep. I went across Ontario, and I dropped down into International Falls.
Okay.
I-Falls, as it's known.
I-Falls.
Yes, and went to Rainy Lake and spent a week on an island owned by Ernest Oberholzer, who was one of the founders of the Wilderness Society.
Really?
And he was responsible for the Boundary Waters canoe area, and also Quetico Provincial Park.
Well, you were telling, too, you're traveling around in that VW van. You've had some just interesting things happen. You've sold like 400 books riding in that van. But the one story you told me was hilarious of being in the New Jersey Turnpike.
New Jersey Turnpike at 4:30 in the morning. There was no one else awake, and I pulled into this gas station, and on the Jersey Pike, you can't pump your own gas, which I never knew.
Okay.
And I have to unlock my gas cap because it's the 1985 edition.
Right. Well, they're siphoning gas on
a
car.
Right. So he said, no, I have to do that. It's the law. And I said, it's the law. And so I have a picture of my book on the back of the van, and he started asking me about the van. And he said, I need to buy one of those for my girlfriend. And I said, I'd love to. What's her name? And he said, Pumpkins. And I said, okay. So I started signing Pumpkins. And he puts both his hands up and he says, stop, it's with a Z. I said, okay. So that's one of the most interesting signings that I've had.
See, he got the Z that my daughter needs to have somebody take because she's an Elizabeth with an S.
Oh, there you go.
So if you just trade with Pumpkins,
right,
and she'd be just fine. So, you know, but this is just going by so quickly. But I do want to touch on one point you make is that the trail is the trail and continues to be available because of just, I think, hundreds, if not thousands, of volunteers and just organizations that have taken it upon themselves to maintain it and do things like the one stone stairway that I saw early on in the book. It's just amazing to think about those stones being placed that way so
right.
that there's a decent staircase. And the guy that did that apparently had national renown as a result of
He started there, and everyone said, how does he do this? And he's been all over the world designing trails. It's sort of like the Jack Nicklaus, you know, golf course thing. But seriously, erosion and all those things really take damage on the trail. And in order to keep people from making bigger and wider mud holes, they have quite a volunteer effort, which has actually been in the DNA of the trail from the very beginning.
Sure.
And so the 13 Uber organizations that sort of shepherd the trail stewardship, it's basically down to now a person can sign up for a mile, and it's their mile of trail, and they go out in the spring and fall and make sure the blowdowns are cleared away and the bridges are in good shape, and if stairways need to be built, they report in, and
bridges
stairways get built, same thing.
Yeah.
And it's 100% volunteer. They take donations for the materials or donations in kind and from lumber yards and such, and out they go.
Boy, isn't that something? It's the bombastic personalities that get things done, but it's those thousands of people in the background that maintain and keep it going.
And every time I see someone out there doing a trail crew, I stop and thank them. And the same with people who stop and pick up the occasional gum wrapper.
Sure.
I've met people who have said to me, how come there's no trash on that entire trail? And I said, because people know the first one that stays there is likely to start the cascade effect.
Sure. Sure. When you talk about that, there are, of all the people that start it, the trail, only 20% usually finish.
Right.
And it's a surprisingly low number, 116 or something, that finish it any given year.
Right.
It's
the same with section hikers like us that do a little piece every year. It's mentally and physically more challenging than I think most people believe when they start. And so the reality hits. And I talk about it in the book. There's a thing called the Virginia Blues. And Virginia is actually a quarter of the trail. It's over 500 miles long. And people starting from the south will get through Georgia's 70 miles. They get through North Carolina and Tennessee, and then they come into Virginia and they start realizing that getting that next state under their belt is a pretty long and labored process.
Sure.
And there are a lot of ups and downs, and you have to get up and do it every day. And boy, after a while, a nice juicy steak and a soft bed and somebody else cooking for you, those things start in a shower, start sounding pretty good.
Like Samson and Delilah
right,
on the trail.
Right.
Come on, you want to do this. You know you do.
Well, one of the comments I get is, how many times did you guys actually bail out for a mile off the trail to get a cheeseburger? And I say, every time we could, right? So between the two of us, it's like, gee, I think there's a restaurant 2 miles off the trail.
And, sure, sure. Well, and you have stories of, you know, being in your truck and, you know, parked on private land, unbeknownst to you, 3:30 in the morning, police officer comes by and says, "Hey, what are you doing here?" So,
right.
Just filled with wonderful.
And a porcupine eating my truck.
Oh, that's a wonder. You have to read that part of the story, folks. So, our guest this morning has been Jeffrey Ryan. Just a joy to talk with you, Jeffrey. I'm so
Likewise. So
glad you reached out. We have to have you back on the show again. I know you're going
to
be taking a tour in October. You'll be coming through Baraboo Public Library.
Yes.
What a blessing for them to be able to have somebody like of your knowledge and storytelling potential to be a part of the Baraboo community for that night. So when is that? October 16th?
That's October 16th in the evening.
Okay.
And that worked out really well. It's all this happenstance stuff, right?
Sure.
I was staying at Devil's Lake and had a rain day and wanted to get to the library and strike up a conversation. The next thing you knew, I'm coming back.
Well, I think, who is it? Meg, that runs the executive director there. She and I went to a skill conference with training for a year.
Great.
Just a wonderful lady. So she's got a great staff there, and I'm sure you'll be a wonderful part of her series.
Looking forward
this fall.
To it.
So Jeffrey Ryan has been here. He's the author of Appalachian Odyssey, a 28-year hike on America's Trail. That book is available on Amazon.com. It's distributed through the National Book Network. Published by Down East Books.
Correct.
That's the name of the publishing
company. In Camden, Maine.
So wonderful, wonderful read, folks. Even if you're planning on doing the Appalachian Trail, it's a great book. If you've been on the Appalachian Trail, I'm sure you will relate to a lot of the stories that Jeff tells. And if you're never going to go on the Appalachian Trail, but you know about it, you know it exists somewhere out there in the East, it's just a fun read, just enjoyable. It's always fun to read a book by someone who had fun writing it and doing what the book is about. So that just pervades the pages of it.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our sponsors, and then I'll be back with Community Calendar here in just a little bit. So don't go anywhere. Again, thanks, Jeffrey, for being on the show this morning.
Thank you. It was terrific.
Been a great time. So I wish we had an hour and 45 minutes to talk. So.
Well, we'll do that at the library.
Okay, that sounds good. I'll be there. Aloha. So take care, folks. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Well, this has just been a wonderful opportunity for me to get to know Jeffrey and to hear more about his existing book and his travels along the Appalachian Trail, as well as the new upcoming book that'll be out in bookstores sometime this fall, I believe September. But closer to home, I want to wrap up our show like we usually do with talking about some of the great events going on around town in the coming week. So first off is a Vintage Brewery tour. That's right. If you live in the area, you know that Vintage Brewery has been opening or developing a brand new site that's going to be here in Sauk City. So you can get on your hard hats because they're going to be touring the Vintage Brewery construction site. So join them for a behind-the-scenes tour of the building process and ask questions about construction before the final bricks are laid and beams are put in. So give them a call over at the Chamber office at 643-8346 for more information. The event is free and it'll be running from 1 until 2 p.m. today. So you've still got time to get over there and get it done. So also Vintage again is having another one of their wonderful concerts over at the Woodshed Ale House. This week it's Gin Mill Hollow. Gin Mill Hollow is a musical trio of Mark Norman, Dan Plardy, and Joshua Giodice. Giudici. I'm going to say it Italian. I hope that's close to being right. They're singing songs while playing stringed instruments of all varieties. So, as usual, the concert will be over at the Woodshed Ale House starting at 7 o'clock until 9 p.m. Go on over. Have a Sauk City Hop-a-Rama kind of brew ale and enjoy yourself listening to some great music there. And then also, our friends over at the River Arts on Water Gallery are going to be having another one of their great crafts and drafts workshops from 7 p.m. until 9 p.m. This time, it's upgrading your plastic water bottle into a custom glass one. So glass bottles prevent your water from getting that plastic taste. So they contain no harmful chemicals. They chill faster and are easier to clean and reuse. And in this class, you're going to learn how to safely and expertly etch the glass into designs of your choosing. So it'll be happening at the River Arts on Water River Arts on Water Studio. Come on, get your mouth going there, Raul. At 590 Water Street this Friday, July 28th from 7 until 9 p.m. If you've got any questions, give Christina Koopman a call. Kate Koopman at River Arts Inc. is her email address, and you can also call there at 643-5215. There is a fee for the class. It's $55. That's $5 per person. But the class lasts 2 hours and includes all the necessary supplies. So feel free to partake in that wonderful crafts and drafts course. Also on this Saturday, don't forget about the regular things that are going on. Farmers Market, of course, has been going on since May. We've got Sauk Prairie Foster and Adoptive Family Gathering going on. That is an event that happens up at the JC Athletic Park, actually. So it's a potluck picnic to celebrate the special joys and challenges of our families. So bring a dish to pass and a game or activity to share, and all the kinds of paper products will be provided. If you want any more information, contact Tara at 608-513-1413. And of course, another really exciting artistic event. Those of you that listen to the show know that I'm artsy fartsy in a major way, but Whitwin is having another one of their great concerts. Mike Boss has taken over that adventure out there at Whitwin, and they have just continued to be as wonderful as they always were. This weekend, it's the Harmonious Whale, who they are actually a regular out there. If you've been out to the Whitwin concerts, I think just about every year Harmonious Whale has done a concert. Just wonderful, wonderful music. The Whale's made up of mandolin, guitar, female vocals and drums, playing jazz, bebop, and gypsy swing, which is one of my favorite kinds of music. So get on out there. The campground opens at 4:30 and concerts begin at 6:30. There'll be food available beginning at about 4:30, and concert goers should bring lawn chairs, blankets, and their own picnic supper, or purchase food from the food stand on the grounds. It's just, if you haven't been out to one of those folks, I'm telling you, it is just one of the wonderful gems of our area. So please feel free to partake. And then also, just want to call out a couple of quick things. On Monday of next week, there's going to be a teen craft going on at the Sauk City Library. They're making fidget spinners, which I don't know if you've read anything about these fidget spinners, but they have just absolutely taken things by storm. I understand there are some school systems that have to prevent them. They have to actually make them, you can't use them in school because they're just so crazy popular with kids. But they'll be making those from 5 until 6 p.m. on Monday. Try your hand at making your own fidget spinner. So space is limited. Sign up today by calling the library at 643-8346. So that'll be it for July. Can you believe it? Man, July is going to be over next week already. And then we'll be into August. So let's see if they're on August 1st, there's a Get Moving Sauk Prairie. So if you've never been to one of those, it's the first Tuesday of every month. And also it's Tuesday Cruise Day Car Show and the Sauk Prairie Night Out event, which will be going on at Marion Park. Sauk Prairie Night Out is an annual event designed to strengthen our neighborhood spirit through police, other emergency services, and community partnerships. So the goal is to heighten crime prevention awareness and to understand local anti-crime programs and explore several services and safety topics. So feel free. There'll be a Sauk County search and rescue helicopter landing at approximately 6 p.m. for families to explore. Internet crime safety prevention, texting and drunk driving simulator, tour police squad and bike safety, just all kinds of wonderful opportunities to learn about our emergency services. So check that out. It'll be over at Marion Park, I think. Yep, Marion Park, Tuesday, August 1st, from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. So hope you can participate in that, because it's a great opportunity to learn about all the great emergency services. So that wraps up our show for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with our first show of August, which should be exciting, hoping at least. So we'll be talking with the folks that are responsible for the Deerlith Moments program. So be talking with Mitch Meyer. He'll be here to talk about that program and about his own business, which is a personal chef job or a business that he started. So we'll learn about that, learn about Mitch's long and rich history in the area, as well as find out more about the Deerlith Society show, which you're going to want to stay tuned for right now, because it's coming up right after Mornings at McFarland. So thanks for joining us, folks. We'll see you next week here on WRPQ Radio 99.7 FM.
Mornings at McFarland's with host Raul LaBrèche is produced live at our 99.7 FM studio at McFarland's in Sauk City. Listen again next Wednesday at 8:05 for another edition of Mornings at McFarland's. Today's show is presented by Prairie Clinic, Sophie's Fine Jewelry and Gift Shop, and DeMars Plumbing.